mostly clear skies tonight, the low in the mid-60s, and sunny skies for tomorrow with a high in the mid-80s. Right now, it's 82 degrees in Nashville. The time is 11 o'clock. Broadcast of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is coming up next on Nashville Public Radio.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. We've all got that one unstable friend. One day he's high as a kite, one day he's depressed, the next he's bouncing off the walls again. This can be annoying, but it's a lot worse when he's carrying around your retirement savings. We'll ask about this emotional roller coaster, plus Carl Castle presents the official NPR statement about our relationship.
Even though they're identified as male characters and possess many human traits and characteristics, they remain puppets.
We're still close friends, and no more than that. And we'll be that as we wait to start our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. The number of Republicans running for president is down by one. Former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty says he's dropping out of the race after placing third in yesterday's Iowa straw poll. He made the announcement on ABC's This Week, where he was asked, why not stick it out?
We needed to get some lift. You know, I'm from a small state. I don't have a big national financial network or political network. And so I think the measure of us in this phase was really, can you get some lift out of Ames to get the ante, if you will, to get to the next round? And that didn't happen.
Pawlenty did not endorse anyone else. Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann also appeared on ABC's This Week. She says she thinks she won the straw poll because voters are worried about the economy.
You saw a big message sent to Washington. People really saw the punch to the gut that America got this last week, and they really want someone that they can trust, that they believe in, who's actually going to turn the economy around.
Bachmann won 29% of the votes in the straw poll. Texas Congressman Ron Paul came in second with 28%. 4 years ago, Mitt Romney won the GOP straw poll in Iowa, but this year he finished far behind. NPR's Don Gagne reports the former Massachusetts governor decided against spending the money necessary to be competitive this year.
Romney finished seventh in the Iowa straw poll. He was on the ballot because he is an official candidate. All official candidates were on the ballot. But he did not compete. He did not bus people in, which is what campaigns do here. He didn't have a tent set up where he had live entertainment and barbecue. Here's his thinking. He spent a lot of money and a lot of time 4 years ago. He won the Iowa straw poll, but did not win the Iowa caucus. So he simply didn't play this year, and he's focusing on the primaries and the caucuses and not the straw poll.
NPR's Don Gagne reporting from Ames, Iowa. Militants in Afghanistan stormed a provincial governor's compound north of Kabul today. NPR's Ahmed Shafi reports at least 22 people were killed.
The attack began at around 11:30 a.m. local time. A suicide car bomb exploded at the southern gates of the governor's compound in Chotanagpur, the capital of Parwan province north of Kabul. Soon after, five men wearing suicide vests attacked the governor's compound. According to Afghanistan's Ministry of Interior, two of the suicide bombers managed to blow themselves up, while the other three were killed by the police. Local officials say most of the dead are government employees. A Taliban spokesman claimed responsibility for the attack. An Afghan government spokeswoman says a meeting of security chiefs was underway at the time, with local police and intelligence chiefs present, along with advisors from NATO, but no foreign casualties have been reported so far. Ahmad Shafi, NPR News, Kabul.
This is NPR News from Washington. Rebels in Libya hoisted their flag in the center of the town of Zawiya today. The apparent takeover effectively cuts off the Libyan capital, Tripoli, from its main link to the outside world. The advance also deals a psychological blow to the forces loyal to President Muammar Gaddafi. The rebels now control the coast both east and west of Tripoli. Arrests in England continue, and the courts are in session today after the riots that led to millions of dollars of damage and five deaths. Larry Miller reports that while the streets are calm, there's growing tension between police and politicians.
Prime Minister David Cameron has upset senior police officials by calling for zero tolerance against criminals while planning to cut 16,000 police jobs as part of his austerity plan. He's also drawn a sharp rebuke over his invitation to Bill Bratton for advice. Bratton is known for tackling gangs in New York, Los Angeles, and Boston. Hugh Orde, the president of Britain's Police Chiefs Association, says he has little to learn about gangs from an area of America with 400 of them. In addition, the acting head of Scotland Yard, Tim Godwin, accuses politicians of inconsistency. He says police are criticized for either using excessive force or not being forceful enough. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
Authorities in northeastern China today shut down a petrochemical plant. They were responding to thousands of demonstrators who demanded the plant be moved because of pollution concerns. The plant makes paraxylene, widely used in the production of polyester. Last week, a dike guarding the plant was damaged by a tropical storm, raising fears that floodwaters could release toxic chemicals. I'm Noor Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Kauffman, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, sponsor of the Ice House Entrepreneurship Program. Learn more at kauffman.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Davis Concert Hall at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We do have a great show for you today. We got Captain Andy Hilstrin from the TV show The Deadliest Catch. He'll be joining us later. Give us some fishing tips. But first, things are so nuts right now in our country. They're so crazy. It's so tough. Things are so bad. We've retired the bald eagle as our national symbol and replaced it with a circling vulture. So we did what anybody would do in a reasonable response to the news of this week. We ran away to interior Alaska. Where we're going to stockpile canned goods and ammunition and wait until global warming turns this place into way northern California. But before we go off the grid, you've got one last chance to win Carl's voice and your voicemail. Give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Colleen Henry from San Francisco, California.
And how are things in San Francisco?
Well, we're still waiting for summer to come here, but pretty good.
Really? Because it's over in Alaska. They've had it. They can lend it to you now. They're done with it. What do you do there?
I'm a doctoral student. I study social welfare.
Oh, cool. Social welfare?
Yes.
How's that going?
Well, you know.
Well, welcome to the show, Colleen. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. Mr. Adam Felber is here.
Hi, Colleen.
Next, a comedian performing at the Alley Theater in Houston, Texas on August 27th. I'm talking about Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Colleen.
And finally, a former Alaskan who's been back for a week and already smells like fish, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Colleen.
Now, Colleen, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Your first quote is a headline from Wednesday's New York Post, God bless them.
It's crazy, like a hooker's drawers. Up, down, up.
The Post
was referring to the wild ups and downs of what this week?
I believe that would be the stock market.
Yes, indeed. The stock market completely lost control. It careened up and down all week. Then on Friday, it finally announced it was quitting its job, getting a tattoo of the 90s tech boom on its lower back, and leaving its wife for a much younger index fund. The president tried to calm things down with a public address on Monday from the White House. It did not help. His optimistic message about the economy was tempered by the sight of Michelle and the kids in the background defending the vegetable garden from desperate foragers.
I don't have any stocks.
You don't?
Me either.
No.
I mean, I did.
No, I went broke years ago, and so, you know, part of me just sits back and chuckles.
Now, the volatility in the stock market, all the craziness, was blamed on Standard & Poor's downgrading of America's debt rating. It hasn't had any real effect on interest rates, but it's ruined our image. Mexico is embarrassed to be living next to us. We're bringing the continent's property values down. We're like the crack house of North America.
Yeah. Alaskans can't drive through Canada anymore. They make them go around.
It's true. Here, Colleen, is your next quote.
Due to the imminent collapse of society, we regret to announce we're closing at 6 tonight.
That was a sign in a subway store south of London this week. They had to close down early that day due to what?
The riots.
Yes, the London riots. London and other cities in Britain were hit by rioters, some of whom were protesting steep cuts in government programs, while others were auditioning for Simon Cowell's new TV show, Britain's Got Hooligans. Now, the United Kingdom is not used to this. Most of their police are unarmed. They're helpless. So they've been authorized, now that the riots have continued, to use rubber bullets, water cannons, along with more traditional British weapons, like cutting remarks, looking down one's nose, and remaining emotionally distant.
Break out the disdain.
We'll cut them dead socially.
Should I shame them, sod?
There's been some talk that they were using unauthorized haughty looks.
Yes. Politicians are blaming the riots on the disaffected and poor youth, but a lot of the rioters are apparently middle class or even wealthy kids, and that explains this strangely stilted British riot etiquette that we've been seeing. It's like, oh, no, don't use that to smash the car. That's your salad bat.
When this happens, in Cairo and Syrian places, it's the Arab Spring. Is this like the British Spring, the Irish Spring, perhaps?
The Irish Spring.
Yeah. All right, Colleen, here's your last quote.
Even though they're identified as male characters and possess many human traits and characteristics, they remain puppets and do not have a sexual orientation.
That was a statement from the makers of Sesame Street responding to a growing movement demanding that Who finally be legally wed under the laws of New York State.
Bert and Ernie.
Bert and Ernie, yes. The rumors have circulated for years. Two long-term male roommates who bicker but never separate, never date girls, and enjoy bubble baths. Now that gay marriage is legal in New York, activists think the makers of Sesame Street should admit what's obvious to everyone and make honest Muppets of Bert and Ernie. The Sesame Street producers think this is ridiculous, justifiably so. What kind of person looks at a hunk of foam and thinks about its love life? Well, my futon looks so unfulfilled and lonely. Maybe I should get it an ottoman.
Well, Paula and I disagree about this.
You do? What do you think?
Paula does not think they're lovers.
I've never thought that they were lovers.
And I always have.
Really?
Yeah.
What
do you always have?
Well, not always, but for quite a while.
Like when you were doing How Many Is One, when you were watching the show?
Sure.
As a kid?
Yeah. No. But, you know, rumors have been circulating for 25 years about these guys.
I don't see why that would upset people more than the interspecies relationship of Miss Piggy and Kermit.
Yeah, that's true. You know? Carl, how did Colleen do in our quiz?
Colleen, you had three correct answers, so congratulations. I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well done, Colleen. Yes, for Colleen. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, according to a new study, 9 out of 10 cat owners are what?
Other cats. It's tragic. And it needs to be stopped.
Exactly.
Feline trafficking among felines is... I'm glad we brought this up because I do a lot of volunteer work in this arena. I try to counsel cats about
this. Counsel cats owned by other cats.
Yes, let them know that heritage be damned, they have other choices.
That's true.
Okay, let's go back. 9 out of 10 cat owners are...
What?
I'm going to need a hint.
I wish I could eat fancy feast and nap all day.
Jealous of their cats.
Yes. We all,
again, yes. Where do you get this information?
I will tell you.
You ask 10 people.
9 out of 10 cat owners are jealous of their cats. We also would have accepted sad and alone. The survey... The survey conducted by the respected research firm Whiskas...
They do great work.
Yes, finds in social science. Finds that most cat owners envy their cats lazy days and vomit wherever I want attitude. Some cat owners are taking this attitude to heart. They're installing a giant sandbox in the bathroom or replacing their bathtub fixtures with a giant raspy tongue.
Mm. Oh, to hack up a hairball, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's living. I am a multiple cat owner. I'm neither lonely nor alone. I am not jealous of my cats.
Did you ever want to pee on your own shoes?
I have peed on my own shoes. How do you think you teach your cats to do that?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be a cat. Because a cat's the only cat who knows where it's at. When playing jazz, you always has a welcome mat. Everybody digs a swinging cat.
Coming up, a gift for the nerd who has everything. It's our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. And Andy Hillstrand, captain of the deadliest cat ship, joins us to play Not My Job. Support for our Fairbanks show comes from ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to responsibly developing Alaska's resources. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. Lumber Liquidators, providing hardwood flooring for the home handyman and professionals. Catalogs are available, 1-800-HARDWOOD. And Motel 6, offering an iPhone app for booking a room at locations throughout the country. Available from the App Store, motel6.com. Tom.
Where they'll leave the light on for you.
They will. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Lisa Mullins. It's 1965. India and Pakistan are at war, and a Pakistani pilot shoots down an Indian plane. He learns later that the aircraft was carrying civilians. Last week, he sent an apology to the late Indian pilot's daughter. Their email exchanges sparked conversation on both sides of the Indian-Pakistani border. That story next time on The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock. The Nashville Public Library, where books are only half the story, offers this piece of summer poetry. Imagine entertainment for free, a place for community to be. To learn and to grow more than books you should know, the library is great, you should see. More information on services, books, music, movies, and more at the Nashville Public Library is online at halfthestory.org.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 81 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Davis Concert Hall at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Gretchen Cook from Spokane, Washington.
Hey, Gretchen, how are things in Spokane?
Doing pretty good.
I'm glad to hear it. What do you do there?
Currently I'm learning how to be a new mom, but when I return from maternity leave, I'm a program manager.
How's the new mom thing going?
It's going all right. I have a three-week-old.
A three-week-old?
Wow.
Oh.
That's nice.
Wow. Has your child already started to resent you yet?
Not yet.
All right. That'll come. That's more like 6 months. All right. Well, welcome to the show, Gretchen. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Gretchen's topic?
Here, try these new heated earbuds.
It's not enough to just own fancy gadgets these days. You need all the stuff that goes with them, too. The docking stations and earphones and little miniature beds to tuck them in at night so they'll be comfy. Our panelists are going to read you three stories about fancy new tech accessories. Guess the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Yes.
First up, let's hear from Adam Felber.
What happens when you're entertaining at home, receive a cell phone call, and don't impress everyone by rushing to answer it inside your own genuine refurbished Bluetooth-enabled vintage London red phone box? Well, then you won't look nearly as cool as a guy who does answer his cell phone calls in a genuine refurbished Bluetooth-enabled vintage London red phone box. Yes, thanks to the innovators at BritTech Limited, for a mere $9,000, this high-tech immobile phone kiosk will ring whenever a paired cell phone is in range, which will magically allow you to go through the cumbersome process of opening the booth's doors, walking into the booth, shutting the door, picking up the heavy receiver, and amazingly enough, talk to someone miles away, all with the added new era benefits of poor reception and dropped calls. Shipping of the 1,600-pound cast iron phone kiosk is included in the price tag and is a sure way to simultaneously display your anglophilia, technophilia, and complete wankerhood.
Using a immobile phone booth in your home to make mobile phone calls, your next story of an accessory for your accessory comes from Paula Poundstone.
If you've got a fancy piece of technology, you've got to have something fancy to wrap it in. Let's see, Gucci, Vera Wang, nah, I got it. How about Bernie Madoff's used pants? Tech entrepreneur John Vaccaro bought the former duds of Bernie Madoff and turned them into ostentatious tech jammies. When at an auction of Bernie Madoff's belongings, Vaccaro saw the wild desire behind the plaintiff bids of the Wall Street bankers on the swindler's velvet slippers. He sensed a market for all things Madoff. He managed to snag a stack of pants and cashmere sweaters formerly worn by the former con artist. Each pair of Madoff's 35 to 36-inch waist pants yields four iPad cases with the promise of unlimited more. Some even still bear Bernie's name tag mandatorily sewn into his clothes each summer before Ponzi camp.
iPad covers made from the very trousers and other clothing of Bernie Madoff. Your last story of gadget augmentation comes from Tom Baudet.
Responding to the alarming rise of injuries caused by engrossed smartphone and tablet users walking into traffic and over cliffs, leading PDA makers Apple and Nokia have joined forces to produce WatchOut, a Bluetooth proximity and audio sensor that employs a simple on-screen text message to keep users apprised of their surroundings. Bus approaching right flank might allow you to survive your fantasy football draft. brick wall ahead could save you thousands on corrective face surgery while you monitor your disintegrating 401k. The application can help with basic social cues as well. The line has moved. Will alert you to step forward at the Starbucks or DMV. Your wife appears to be speaking to you, and a child sounds injured, may keep your home life peaceful even while you ignore it. Watch out for watch out approaching from your blind side.
All right. All of these, we all admit, would be something that the tech lover in your life might want, but only one of them exists. Is it from Adam Felber, a genuine British red telephone box engineered so that you can use it to make calls on your cell phone from the comfort of your home? From Paula Poundstone, iPad covers made from the very trousers and other clothing of Mr. Bernie Madoff? Or from Tom Baudet, an app for your smartphone that will tell you what's going on around you while you're looking at your smartphone? Which of these is the real story of a tech accessory?
I know a few people who could probably use an app that would help them know what's going on around them, so I'm going to go with Tom's story.
You're going to go with Tom's story about the app that warns you that you're about to walk into a wall and such?
Yes.
All right, well, that's your choice then. Well, we actually spoke, we're so pleased, to the person who's bringing this great thing to the tech users of the world.
I went on the auction site for the Bernie Madoff auction, and all of a sudden I saw 20 cashmere sweaters. And immediately I was like, light bulb, I'm making iPad covers out of them.
Yeah, that was John Vaccaro, the man behind the Bernie Madoff iPad covers made from Madoff's cashmere sweaters and his pants. So I'm sorry, but obviously Paula Poundstone had the real answer, as strange as it may seem. However, I think that money is going to be flooding in to invest in Tom's product. Especially from disaffected spouses, am I guessing correctly? Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gretchen.
Look down to earth, might just give it a whirl. I'm a low-tech guy in a high-tech world. I'm a low-tech guy in a high-tech world.
And now the game where we invite interesting people on to do something that will barely hold their interest. It's called Not My Job. Captain Andy Hillstrand chose to spend his life in one of the most frightening, dark, and at times repulsive fields one can be part of, reality TV.
Documentary TV, my friend. Educational TV.
Absolutely. I'm very educated.
Yeah.
He captains the good ship, the Time Bandit, on the TV show The Deadliest Catch on the Discovery Channel. Captain Andy, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Great to have you. So let's get this straight. You're not some guy they brought up to play this role on TV. You were an actual Alaskan fishing boat captain long before anybody ever heard of you on TV, right?
Yep, born and raised in Homer, Alaska, and been fishing 25 years before they asked us to be on the TV show.
Really? Okay, so you're out there, you're catching mainly crabs. That's what you do. That's what's on the
yeah.
show.
My mother wanted so much more. Yes, I catch crabs.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. When I'm the only guy that can get crabs and not get divorced.
That's so. True. There you go. Hello. Yeah. So when the producers of Deadliest Catch or the Discovery Channel people first came to you and said, we think that you guys make a great TV show, and we're going to go out there with you and film your exploits, what did you say?
Well, we told them no.
Really?
Yeah. For the first year, we weren't on the show the first season, and then halfway through it, we saw some cameras on this boat called the Maverick, so they asked me again, and I said yes. And
So you said no, and then you saw them working with another boat out there, and you were like, oh, wait a minute. You were jealous.
Nah, yeah.
No,
well,
yes?
It was so much better than my own home video. So, you know, we thought, they said it's going to be a documentary about the most dangerous job in the world. So we thought, okay, it'll be on TV at midnight between how to fix a fender and neuter a cat or something.
No, it was after the neuter a cat, actually.
Yeah.
Andy, can I saw your show by accident. I was actually on an airplane, and I saw you. I said, well, look, that's Andy Hillstrand from Homer. What's he doing on TV? So I plugged in the earphones, and the first thing that you're talking about is your catch. You're saying, well, we got about 16 tons of this and that. And what I remember, Andy, when I'd see you around the docks in Homer, if I ever ran into you, I'd say, hey, Andy, how's it going out there? And you'd just say, oh, yeah, well, we scratched around, you know, we got it too. You would never say anything. And here you are on national TV with tonnage. And so I'm just wondering. Was it just me you didn't want to tell?
You know, that was the hardest part about the show, was telling how bad you hurt, or you know, my hands are numb, you know, and it was like a sign of weakness when we grew up. You never talked about how bad you hurt, or you know, how many crab you caught. You had your secret spot, for crying out loud. Now they show it on TV, your fishing spot. I mean, one of my fishing spots was Mr. Magoo, because this one guy looked like it. And then the thing I get the hardest time about is I fish the butt cheeks. And so then
I'm sorry,
goes,
what did you say?
That's a place. It looks like some butt cheeks.
The show has been on for starting your eighth season now?
It'll be our eighth season starting this October, yeah.
How long did it take you to get used to the fact that there were cameras watching everything you did as you went about your life?
Well, it's been 6 years for us now, and the first year I was like, I am Captain Andy Hillstrand. I am a crab fisherman. And they got this camera right in your face, and then you kind of, then your mother sees you on TV, I wish you wouldn't cuss so much. Bleep, bleep. You know, yeah. And then you're a role model and all that kind of stuff. So about till just 2 years ago, we just said, let's just be who we are. And you know, you try to be who you are, but now it's just, you try not to cuss as much because your mom's watching the show. It doesn't work out too good for us a lot of times, so. Especially with a brother like mine that always tells me what to do.
Well, yeah, your brother, you have family members in the boat. Your brother's in the boat. Yeah. You guys go out. Did you not once break a guitar over his head?
No, I did not break a guitar over my brother's head. It was another boat, called a Wizard. And, the guy tried to punch me in the face and, the guitar punched him back.
Really?
That's all I'm going to say about that, yeah.
Why? What could possibly have been the disagreement? Aren't you catching crabs?
Well, we were at the bar that night, but I sang a couple songs that I wrote, so I guess I didn't sing that good. So.
Wait a minute.
You thought it was a sign of weakness to say that you can't feel your hands, but you go into a bar and sing about catching crabs?
Well, you did that to start the fight you got in, right? Because that's how crabbers relax, I understand it.
Well, you know, and then my brother, he goes, well, darn it, that's on my bucket list now to break a guitar over somebody's head. The release you get from that is amazing. I just have to tell you. Anybody who says they don't want to break a guitar over somebody's lying. You know.
Not a real guitarist.
Yes, not a real guitarist, yeah.
Yeah. One thing we've been thinking about is, like, it's called The Deadliest Catch, and it's all about the incredible dangers endured by you guys, the fishermen out there on the bay, middle of winter, trying to catch these things. These crabs. But one thing nobody ever thinks about is, like, you're doing that. There are these guys trying to film you doing this, right?
Yeah, the cameramen are like having a one-eyed crabber on the boat because they have this viewfinder up to their head and they're wandering around in the most dangerous part of the boat trying to get the best shots. Usually with our greenhorns, we'll put them up in the bait station and keep them safe and stuff like that. But this guy, we get sadistic and we'll like have open hatches and we'll kind of, hey, look at that over there. And then they fall in the hatch and...
You can't beat that Alaska sense of humor.
Yeah. Your pain is our pleasure.
Yeah. One last question, which is there anything exciting coming up on Deadliest Catch? Are you going to change your ways in any way? Are you just going to go out there and keep catching crabs?
To keep being who we are. We're known as pranksters, and this year we gave Sig like 100 Chinese lanterns in the air, and he thought it was a UFO.
Wait, what? Slow down. What did you do?
We snuck up on Sig with all of our lights off, and we lit 100 Chinese lanterns.
Yeah.
And so we got him up in the air, and he thought it was a UFO or a boat going to hit him. And we're all sick. But then the things that they don't see is he put a 55-gallon drum of blue food dye in our water. So my brother turned blue like Papa Smurf. And
and we don't see that?
No, you don't see that one. No, no.
Has it brought people up to where you live in Homer and in the bay to go fishing who don't belong there because they seem so exciting? I can do this.
Yeah, you know, the one of the best ones is I had a 65-year-old guy come up to me and say, so what are my chances? What are my odds? And he's like 5'2". I said, you have more chances getting in the NBA than getting on this boat right here, buddy. So you're saying I have a chance, he said.
Yeah, there you go.
So we just tell him, you know, if that's your dream, do it. But it's a way of life for us, not just a TV show. So.
Well, there you are. Well, Captain Andy, we are glad to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
The Deadliest Catcher.
Oh, God.
So Mo Berg was a Major League Baseball player in the 1920s and 30s, but he also was an international spy.
We're going to ask you three questions about the life and times of catcher Mo Berg. If you get two right, you'll win our prize, one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home voicemail or answering machine. Carl, who is Captain Andy Hillstrand playing for?
He is playing for Jane Atkinson and Doug Tolley of Fairbanks.
There you are.
Let me say I'm sorry right now because I have never heard of Mo.
You never heard of Mo Berg?
Never heard of Mo Berg.
Yeah.
I've heard of Iceberg, but...
All right. It's Mo Berg. Yeah, very good. I can see the kind of sense of humor that you hone working with the same guys in a boat.
Oh, yeah. Close quarters.
Close quarters with your brothers.
Yes.
All right. First question. Mo Berg grew up at a time when Jewish kids were not particularly welcome in baseball. So when he joined his school baseball team as a young boy, he played under what fake name? A, Christopher Christian. B, Runt Wolf. Or C, Smith Jones.
Oh, my Lord. I'm going to have to go with Runt Wolf, I guess.
You're right. He played under the name Runt Wolf.
Yeah. Oh,
somehow thought that name would be unobtrusive.
It's just a unique name.
It
know?
Is. Runt
Everybody
Wolf.
Would guess Christian, so yeah, you know, you don't want to go with that one. So.
Come on. So next question. Now, Mo Berg was highly educated, went to Princeton, could speak 10 languages fluently, which caused one of his more typical teammates to say what? A, you mean there's more than one? B, I don't think that's Italian. I think he's just drunk. Or C, yeah, and he can't hit in any of them.
Oh, Lord. I'm going to have to go with C. He can't hit in any of them.
That's absolutely right. That's what was said.
Oh, God.
Mo Berg was a pretty good defensive catcher, but couldn't hit worth a lick. All right. Berg had an amazing life. He played professional baseball. He traveled the world. But then he became a spy for the precursor of the CIA. He parachuted behind enemy lines during World War II. And many urged him later on to write a memoir, but he backed out of the project at the last minute. Why? A, he insisted on using the title The Greatest Baseball Player in History. B, his ghostwriter mistook him for Mo from the Three Stooges. Or C, he wanted to write it in Sanskrit, in which he was fluent.
Oh, my Lord. What was the first one?
First one was he insisted on using the title The Greatest Baseball Player in History.
I'm going to have to go with that one.
Yeah, that's sort of that. You like that.
Yeah,
you're smiling.
I like that, yeah.
You're like, you'd do that, wouldn't you?
Yes, that's what
I
know. The greatest crabber in history.
Yeah,
yes.
I like it. No, the answer was B. His ghostwriter mistook him for Mo from the Three Stooges. Apparently, the ghostwriter said, "So, we're going to be talking about your time with Larry and Curly." And Mo Berg was so upset that he absolutely walked away. And he spent his last decades living with his sister and being crabby. So there you are.
There you go.
Carl, how did Captain Andy do in our quiz?
Well, Captain Andy had two correct answers, Peter, and that's good enough to win for Jane Atkinson and Doug Tolley.
Well done. Andy Hillstrand commands the crab boat Time Bandit. You can see his adventures out in the Bay of Alaska and the deadliest catch in the Discovery Channel. Captain Andy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being with us. In just a minute, Carl tells you the ending in our listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals, from physicians and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers. Details at angieslist.com. Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. And Turner Classic Movies with Summer Under the Stars, dedicating each day in August to a Hollywood actor like James Stewart. TCM.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Texas Governor Rick Perry enters the GOP fray. We'll look at how the Republican field of presidential contenders is shaping up, plus the other big rumble in the streets in Israel over inequality and that country's wealth gap. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11.
Hearing voices.
Dancing. Putting the feathers on.
Crow fair.
The drum itself is a heartbeat of our nation.
a gathering of the tribes.
We are known as the teepee capital of the nation. For the last couple of 3 years, we've had over 400 and 500 teepees, as much as 17,000 people here during the third week in August.
Crow Fair, a portrait in sound, this week on Hearing Voices.
Saturday afternoons at 2 and Sunday nights at 8 o'clock.
Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from Cumberland University, providing working registered nurses with a new RN to BSN degree program that's 100% online. Information at cumberland.edu/online. And from you, the listener, you can become a member or renew your membership online anytime at WPLN.org. The time is 11:40. It's 81 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Davis Concert Hall at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. In just 1 minute, Carl listens to the new Leanne Rimes record in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, you may have heard the story that the Obama campaign has decided that they're most likely going to be running against Romney, and they're readying a negative campaign focused on how, quote, weird Romney is. Well, among the evidence for his weirdness, they're going to cite Romney's taste in what?
Messiahs?
No.
Let's see. Music?
No. I'll give you a hint. Nothing comes between him and his eccentricity.
Underwear?
No.
Jeans?
Yes, jeans. His jeans, Romney's jeans. Specifically, the Gap brand skinny jeans that Mitt Romney wore at an event in New Hampshire a while ago, after his campaign advisors finally talked him out of his customary denim tuxedo. Now, is this jeans-based attack really something that Barack Mom Jeans Obama wants to do? It's a classic trick. You project your own weakness onto your opponent. In fact, the Obama campaign is getting ready to launch a front group, Swift Pants Veterans for Truth. They'll spread the rumor that in the 70s, Romney once wore bedazzled Jordaches.
I've never seen the guy's jeans.
Well, that's because he doesn't usually wear them. So he came out wearing these skinny jeans, and everybody was like, come on, Mitt.
Really?
Yeah.
People were upset about that?
People were upset about that.
With everything going on in the world, that's what people were upset about?
Pretty much.
It was the way he combined it with the belly tee.
Yeah.
I was only bothered by it because he's older than I am, and I can't touch a pair of skinny jeans.
In the end, Obama may not need to bring up Romney's jeans. This week, Romney was in Iowa. And when he was challenged by hecklers at the Iowa State Fair to raise taxes on corporations, he responded by saying, quote, corporations are people, my friend, unquote. He went on to say that corporations need to be cared for, cherished, loved. And he ended his speech by reaching into the crowd, picking up an adorable limited partnership S corporation from its mother's arms and kissing it gently on the portfolio. It's touching, really. Paula, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper unveiled a new diplomatic strategy this week to get the Brazilian president to agree with him about something at a meeting. Harper did what?
Complimented his pants. Because I know that's very important in the world right now.
Yeah. Those jeans flatter you. It's kind of a teenage girl thing to do. Apologies to the teenage girls.
I have no idea.
Well, at first they thought that he really just had to go, but he didn't come back.
He said yes. He had to go use the bathroom?
Well, I'll give it to you. In fact, he went to the bathroom and refused to come out. He locked himself in the bathroom. Basically, the argument was that Harper, they're having a summit meeting in Brazil, and Harper wanted to do the speeches and toasts before luncheon was served. The president of Brazil, she wanted to do it after luncheon was served. And so in order to win the argument, Harper went and locked himself in the bathroom and refused to come out until the Brazilian president gave him and did it his way. Both Brazilian and Canadian officials denied this account, saying, actually, no, he just needed to go. Harper does have a habit of using the bathroom at odd moments. At a G20 summit recently, and this is true, he missed out on the group picture because he had to run to the restroom, where he cried his eyes out over not being given the spot next to Angela Merkel.
You know, I've talked to a number of people here in Alaska that have outhouses, and so I imagine their teenagers don't hide in the bathroom.
No.
That's how you learn them.
Yeah.
That's got to cut down on that behavior, I would assume.
Come February, that's a cold way to have a tantrum.
You come to your senses right away.
Oh, yeah. Tom, according to the Wall Street Journal, new applicants have to endure extensive interviews, fill out pages and pages of forms, and face intense scrutiny from evaluators just to get into what?
This is not getting into the Wall Street Journal.
No. According to a story in the Wall Street Journal, it said that the application process has become very, very rigorous, very, very difficult now, especially in the tonier parts of New York and environs, to get into what?
To get into the Vietnamese nail salon on 75th Street.
No. I'll give you a hint. They may also test for appropriate coldness of nose and frisbee catching
school. Oh,
to
my
get
gosh.
Into dog obedience school?
Not even obedience school.
Just like doggy daycare.
Doggy daycare. Doggy wow. daycares are very, very
so,
exclusive.
So I'm just wondering, they ask these dogs?
Yeah, basically what they do is they evaluate the dogs before they agree to accept them. Does your dog growl when you take food away from him?
Woof.
Does he steal food when you're not looking?
Woof.
If so, your dog is a dog. Also, he's probably not welcome at a number of competitive new doggy daycares like Camp Bow Wow in New York. They require a long questionnaire, 3 hours of supervised playtime, and a high score in the L-hat, or the leg-humping aptitude test.
Can you imagine cramming with your dog for his quiz the next day, you know?
Come on, you know this. You know this.
Coming up, it's lightning, fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on the air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows, most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. You can also check out there How to Do Everything, the new podcast from the producers of Wait, Wait. This week, how not to disappoint your daughter when she asks for a pony. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there, this is Bobby Thompson from Kaneohe, Hawaii.
Kaneohe, whoa, that sounds like a fun place. Where's that exactly?
It's on the windward side, the northeast facing side of Oahu.
Oh, wow, that's a nice place to be. What do you do there?
I'm a grad student studying oceanography.
Oh, and there happens to be an ocean right there. How convenient.
That worked out.
It worked out just great that way.
I'm glad to hear it. Now, Bobby, you are going to play the Listener Limerick Challenge. Carl Castle will perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Of course, your job, fill in that last word or phrase. Complete the limerick. Do that 2 times out of 3. You will win our prize. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here's your first limerick.
For my baby's petite little feet, I am buying athletical treats. Mere weeks after birth, he can tear up the turf. I got him some small baseball
cleat.
Yes! Thanks to the Kirkland Company, athletic shoes with cleats will now be available for kids aged nothing up to 6 months. To help get their athletic careers started before they have any motor control whatsoever. Just because you can't walk doesn't mean you can't break up a double play. For kids that really want to get a head start, Pampers is offering diapers with a built-in cup, and you can now get steroids in a sippy syringe. Here is your next limerick.
Wherever I look, there's cheek squeezers and old pull-my-finger fart teasers. We're having a boom of men past their bloom. The world's overrun by old
geezers.
Very nice. Over the past decade, the number of men 65 and over roaming the earth has jumped by roughly 20%, and they'll soon become the dominant demographic. That's right. It's their lawn, and we're just standing on it.
It's going to change MTV a little bit. That's all I got to say.
What? In the world of lots of old men and women getting plastic surgery?
Mm-hmm.
The hip-hop videos in particular are going to be different.
Yeah, they're just going to be hip videos.
They're going to be
hip-hop.
No, they're going to be artificial hip-hop videos. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well done.
Yeah, they're going to be hip replacement videos.
Here's your last limerick.
My wife is a plot thread uncoiler. She revealed that the bomb's in the boiler. Now I am wise to the story's surprise. I am happy because I heard a...
spoiler.
Yes, indeed, a spoiler. A surprising new study, UC San Diego, claims that contrary to popular belief, being told the ending of a story you're involved with ahead of time increases your enjoyment of that story or movie or book. Like, you'd all be happy if I told you Rosebud was really a man and that he's dead the whole time. Oh, and by the way, Adam wins today.
I'm going to enjoy that more when that happens.
Yeah. Carol, how did Bobby do?
Well, Bobby's the winner, Peter. Three correct answers, so Bobby, I'll be doing the voicemail on your voicemail machine.
Well done.
Excellent.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Adam Felber has the lead, Peter, with 3 points. Paula Poundstone and Tom Bodette are tied for second. Each has 2.
All right. So we flipped a coin. Tom is elected to go second. Paula, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Tuesday, President Obama attended a ceremony honoring the Navy SEALs whose helicopter was shot down in blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. John Stewart and Miss America were among those who criticized Newsweek for using a cover photo that made blank look crazy.
Michelle Bach.
Right. The U.S. Postal Service announced Thursday that it was considering cutting 120,000 blanks.
Employees?
Yeah. Politically minded teens across the country mourned the news that the House of Representatives was ending the 180-year-old blank program.
Page.
Right. Police in Greeley, Colorado were called out to a residence after a woman there reported that her blank had been stolen.
Oh, her statuette of Br'er Rabbit.
Her TV remote.
Yeah.
Very similar.
They found it. Marathon swimmer Diana Nyad was forced to end her attempt to swim from blank to Key West.
Cuba.
Right. The White House denied allegations that it had leaked confidential information to filmmakers for a movie about blank.
About the military?
About the killing of Osama bin Laden.
Oh, right.
To force his tenants to move out to make way for a new construction project, a Shanghai landlord blanked.
To force his unleashed hundreds of rats.
So close. He dumped 110 pounds of scorpions into the apartments.
Okay. This was the other apartment.
Yeah. The rat guy was down the street. Residents woke up to find scorpions everywhere shortly after their landlord was seen dumping bucketfuls of scorpions into apartment windows. He defended himself, saying they were just the new tenants for that 9,000-bedroom apartment up on the 8th floor. Their bedrooms would be very small.
Yes.
Carl, how did Paula do on our quiz?
Paula had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 points, and Paula has taken the lead.
All right, baby. Tom, you're up next. The Federal Reserve announced this week that it would keep blanks near zero for the next 2 years.
Interest rate.
Right. Republican presidential candidates arrived in Iowa for a televised blank on Thursday.
Debate.
Right. In spite of claims by rebel forces, Libyan state television aired footage showing that blank's youngest son is alive.
Muammar Gaddafi.
Right. A woman in Illinois finished taking the state bar exam even though she was blank.
Dead.
In labor. The George Lopez Show and the Sci-Fi Channel show Eureka were among television programs that were blanked this week.
Canceled.
Yes, John McCain said he was not sorry and would not apologize for calling Tea Party members blank.
What did he call them? He called them wacko terrorists.
No, he called them hobbits.
Oh,
in the
case
of...
That was Biden who called them wacko terrorists.
The hobbits wanted an apology as well. Yeah. In the case of Overkill, a Hollywood agent not only refused to read a screenplay left behind by a persistent writer, he blanked.
He used it in his bathroom.
No, he had the bomb squad blow it up. So this writer really, really wanted an agent to read his script, and the agent really, really didn't want to read it. So when the writer left a briefcase at the agent's office saying it had a laptop in it with the script on it, the agent called the bomb squad, who blew it up in an alley. The writer, always an optimist, said, "At least he noticed me," and started working on a sequel to The Shrapnel. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 10 points.
All right. Adam, how many of them does Adam need to win?
5 correct answers.
All right, Adam. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Republicans successfully defended 4 of 6 state Senate seats in this week's recall elections in blank.
Wisconsin.
Right. Saying that the economic recovery is being hampered by partisanship, blank spoke to workers at a plant in Michigan on Thursday.
Barack Obama.
Right. On Thursday, the last 3 members of Congress were named to serve on the blank.
Super Congress.
Yes, the Super Committee. On Wednesday, China launched its first blank on its maiden voyage.
Aircraft carrier.
Yes. A taxi driver in China escaped without injury, even though his cab was crushed by blank.
A piano.
Over a ton of instant noodles. The New York Times reported on a new fetal DNA test that can determine a baby's blank as early as 7 weeks into the pregnancy.
IQ.
Sex. Researchers announced this week that they have found the key ingredients of DNA in at least 12 blanks from space.
Meteors.
Right. A British man arrested for running a red light in a horse-drawn carriage blamed it on the fact that blank.
The horse really needed to use the lavatory.
No. He blamed running the red light on the fact that the horse drawing his carriage was colorblind. A man named John Mulvaney says it's not his fault. His horse, Fred, can't tell the difference between a red and a green light. Fred the horse disagreed, however, saying he knew the light was red, but he just wanted to get away from the drunk guy in the carriage behind him. Carl, did Adam do well enough to win?
He needed 5 correct answers, and Adam had 5 correct answers. So with 13 points,
whoa,
Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Thank you very much. Thank you. No, 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 no. Please, stop. No. Thank you.
They stopped there.
Oh, they have? Yeah. Okay.
No.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what we have to do to get our AAA credit rating back. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, providing car insurance shopping tools like real-time comparison quotes and coverage counselors. Learn more at eSurance.com. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at HouseLogic.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions' Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Amy Solomon. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to Michelle Bartlett and the staff of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Summer Sessions. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Schillog, Eva Walterover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, how will this nation get our AAA credit rating back? Paula Poundstone.
Well, my understanding is we went from a AAA to a AA+. And therefore, to get back to the AAA, we're going to have to do extra credit, maybe write a report, do a poster, perhaps a diorama or a mobile.
Tom Baudet.
Same vein as Paula. It's the same way I changed my C in eighth grade grammar to an A. You take an eraser and you rub until the C disappears, and then you write A and really deep, and then you spill a Coke on the whole report card before you show it to your mom.
And Adam Felber.
We're going to do it the way we always do it and just send in the Marines to liberate Standard & Poor's.
There you go.
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carol Castle. Thanks to Adam Felber, Paula Poundstone, Tom Baudet. Thanks to our fabulous audience here at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Thanks to everybody at KUAC. And thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you all next week. This is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
Farmers markets across the state offer the opportunity to purchase locally grown, freshly picked fruits and vegetables with information about where the food was grown, how it was grown, and even the farmer who grew it. Heirloom varieties, local favorites, and requests for next year can be made to these farmers. From now through August, Tennessee's fruits and vegetables are at their peak. Listings for farmers markets across the state are available at picktnproducts.org.
Nashville weather for this afternoon, mostly sunny skies and the high in the mid-80s, mostly clear skies tonight, the low in the mid-60s, and for Monday tomorrow,